Upfront, inside the entertainment industry, is brought to you by member-supported Jazz 91.9 WCLK.
Coming up on this week's edition of Upfront, award-winning documentarian Jamila Wignott is here to discuss her new film, Ailey. Filmmaker Nathan Hale Williams and Pose star Dylon Burnside are here to chat about their upcoming dramatic reading of George M. Johnson's All Boys Aren't Blue. And closing out the show is my exclusive conversation with actresses Crystal Fox and Brisha Webb. They're here to remember the life and legacy of Miss Cicely Tyson, who passed away last week. I'll also be playing music from the Ailey soundtrack, as well as throwback songs from Keith John and Cheryl Pepsi Riley. But first, here's Reva Blue with this week's Entertainment Buzz.
BET Network presents the 22nd Annual Super Bowl Gospel Celebration tonight at 8 p.m. This year's theme, Nothing Can Stop Us, is the inspirational message for the highly anticipated night of praise and worship and will be hosted by national radio and TV personality Ricky Smiley. This year's lineup includes the NFL Players Choir, Erica Campbell, Voices of Fire, presented by Pharrell Williams, P.J. Morton, Kiara Sheard, Corinne Hawthorne, Zacardi Cortez, and an exclusive performance by gospel music pioneer and living legend John P. Key. That's this week's Entertainment Buzz. I'm Reva Blue.
Support for WCLK programming comes from the High Museum of Art, presenting Dawood Bey, an American project, on view now through March 14th. The exhibition features photographs that trace the 45 years of Bey's career, beginning with street photography in 1970s Harlem to recent portraits and landscapes. Time tickets are required and available for purchase at high.org.
Yet who's to say? With unfamiliar faces, you could anymore be.
This is Jasmine Guy, and you're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
Sunday, February 7th is National Black HIV/AIDS Awareness Day, and the Black Leadership AIDS Crisis Coalition, Black, and AIDS Healthcare Foundation, AHF, are teaming up with Inhale Entertainment and All T No Shade Productions for a dramatic reading of George M. Johnson's critically acclaimed novel, All Boys Aren't Blue. The Amazon best-selling book recalls the trials and triumphs George faced as a Black queer boy while also addressing such topics as gender identity, brotherhood, family, and more. The virtual event airs on Monday, February 8th at 8 p.m. and features Jennifer Lewis, Bernard Davis Jones, Thomas Hobson, and my first guest, Pose star Dylon Burnside. The show is also directed, adapted, and produced by Nathan Hale Williams. I caught up with Dylon and Nathan this week to chat about the event and why the stigma surrounding HIV/AIDS in the Black community must end.
You're directing, you've had to reinterpret this from the book. What was that like, and how did you get connected to this project, I'll say?
Well, you know, first, you know, it was a serendipitous occasion because I had just finished reading the book and I had said to myself, I need to reach out to George to congratulate them, to, you know, just say thank you for writing this. And I knew that it had already had such a large impact on people, but it had a personal impact on me. And then I got a call from Amara Kennedy, who is leading up Black at AHF, and they asked me to imagine a dramatic reading. And of course, my mind went someplace well beyond where they had originally intended. But, you know, the text and the work is so vivid and it just lends itself to a visual medium. And so we've taken what you probably think a dramatic reading is and elevated it even further. And then we have these amazing performances led by Dylon and Jennifer Lewis that just really make this something special. So I'm so glad I said yes, even though when they called me, it was at the end of 2020 and I was exhausted. But it's one of those things that I'm glad I overlooked my exhaustion and decided to come on board.
Yeah. And I felt that it was a natural fit since most of your previous film projects have been about the Black gay experience. So to be able to delve into this, I just felt, I was like, oh, I know he's having the time of his life with this.
Well, this is the first one that I've done in a long time since Dirty Laundry, that centers around, you know, Black queerness and, you know, Black gay men and women in America. So it was time to revisit, you know, Dirty Laundry was a gazillion years ago, it seems like. And so what better work to revisit it than All Boys Aren't Blue?
Yeah. And DeLon, let's talk about your connection to the project and who you will be playing in this presentation.
Yeah, so I am playing the youngest version of George from the first chapter of the book. I have been fortunate enough to have met George in New York City prior to working on this project. Have a lot of mutual friends, being a part of the Black, queer, creative crowd in New York. We've gotten a chance to hang out on a number of occasions. And so was super excited about the release of their book. And, you know, we've talked about it. And then this opportunity came up that Nathan asked me to be a part of. And I jumped at the opportunity because I had already loved George and his work. And I love Nathan too. I didn't know his work, but I knew Nathan. And so was grateful to be able to work with these two incredible creatives.
This is all in response to the National Black HIV AIDS Awareness Day, which is taking place on February 7th. And of course, this performance is taking place on Monday, February the 8th because of the Super Bowl. But there are three components to this evening. There's the reading. There's also some more information, like a town hall, if you will. And then there's going to be music. So Nathan, can you talk a little bit about that as well?
Well, yeah, you know, when 2020 hit, you know, we all had to make a pivot, right? And so we all had to adapt and be flexible and be pliable in the way we present work. And so we decided to not only present the film, which in of itself could be a moment, we decided to encapsulate it around a virtual event, which starts off, there's a pre-show that starts off at 7 p.m. and there's a DJ and an art showing curated by Love Jones. There's some messaging, you know, around HIV and AIDS, because that's the point of the evening, is to bring the Black community together to reduce stigma around HIV and AIDS, and then come together as a community to not just to combat HIV and AIDS, but around everything. It's a more global mission. So you're going to get all those kinds of messages. Trenice is debuting a new video. And then, you know, we're going to follow up with a 15-minute talk back with DeLon, George, and some other people. So it's going to be a night, you know, get your cocktails ready, get your popcorn ready, and come and spend a couple of hours with us.
And DeLon, I have to ask, you know, how has working on Pose, or how did working on Pose help you with this performance?
Wow, it's a big question. I think that Pose has been instrumental in a lot of my growth in the past 3.5-4 years now, that since we have this COVID year that seems like it's forever. But Pose has just been instrumental in a lot of my growth as a human being, understanding more the complexities of identity through meeting so many different folks with so many different experiences, which is what I think Nathan is speaking to. This evening is an opportunity for us to come together as Black folks and learn from one another, to learn about the differences in our stories and where we come from, and how our identities can be so disparate, but we're all connected by a common thread. So I've learned that through working on Pose, both as an artist and as a human being. And also I'm always trying to find ways to grow, and I'm grateful to have work like Pose that challenges me to grow as an actor and as an artist. So, you know, it's Pose influences everything that I do at this point.
Wow. So Nathan, I have to ask, and DeLon, I'd love for you to chime in as well. What COVID-19 has taught us or has shown us is that there were issues that we had going on in society that we kind of, you know, shoved under the rug, that we did not address, but having to be at home, having not to be able to go to parties and be as fabulous as we want it to be in the past, we've all had to address and really look at some very hard questions, some very hard issues. Do you think that we are turning a corner within the African American community regarding HIV/AIDS and the stigma around it? I know that that is the theme for the evening, but do you think that we've now finally turned a corner now that everyone has been forced to sit down and really look at issues over this the last year?
Well, I think one of the benefits, if you look at it, the right way of being at home is you have to deal with the self, right? You have to deal with home first. I don't think we have turned the corner. I am hopeful that with events like this and conversations like this, that we can begin to turn the corner, but we must first eradicate all of the divisiveness within our community. And I think the work speaks to that and how George has penned this work talking about the intersectionality of his Black queerness and his Blackness is something that we have to reconcile and deal with in our community, because it's all connected to HIV/AIDS stigma. And that's all that's preventing us from turning that corner. I mean, as we know that there are other communities where we've seen their infection rates go down and ours continue to rise. And I think at the core of that is dealing with Black queerness within the Black community and really having those frank discussions. So I'm encouraged. I've learned a lot. Let's be clear. You know, even as a Black gay man, I've learned a lot from Delon and from George and from all of our conversations about non-binary and gender identity. And I just have learned a plethora of information. So I hope that our program and the film will also educate, and we can start building up our community and breaking down those walls. So we can turn the corner.
And for you, Delon, any feedback or anything you want to add?
Sure. I just say that COVID-19 has taught us what we can live with, what we must absolutely have, it's taught us what we can live without, the things that are extra in our lives, and it's taught us the things that we cannot live without, the things that are a must for us. And all of the hate and divisiveness within the community, that's one of those things that we can do without. But what we can't do without is each other. And I think that us having to be apart has really undergirded that truth. It supported that truth that we can't live without each other. We need the person to our left, our right, in front, behind us. And the more that we come into that awareness, I think the more we'll be able to see the humanity in the next person and turn that corner that you're talking about.
Guys, thank you so much for being a guest today. Guys, thank you so much for being my guest today on the show. We're talking about All Boys Aren't Blue. It is a dramatic reading of this amazing book by George M. Johnson. And that's, again, taking place on Monday, February the 8th at 8 p.m. And give the platform that anyone can catch this in the U.S.
So yes, if you go to ABAB2021.eventbrite.com. It'll give you can register, and then all of the links and viewing links will go out, but we'll also be live streaming it on youtube.com/inhalemegav.
Support for WCOK programming comes from the Atlanta History Center, presenting Black citizenship in the age of Jim Crow, now through February the 28th. Created by the New York Historical Society in collaboration with the National Museum of African American History and Culture, the exhibition explores stories of the historic fight for Black freedom and justice. Lead support for the exhibition is provided by the National Endowment for the Humanities. Information available at Atlanta History Center. Center.com.
See the man all dressed in white.
Trouble, 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 the water.
Oh, it looks like the man of the evil life.
Trouble, trouble, the water.
In
the water.
Oh,
in the water.
Oh,
in the water. Trouble, trouble.
This is Lisa Arendelle, and you're listening to Ray Cornelius on Upfront.
You just heard Wade in the Water from the soundtrack to the Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater's classic ballet, Revelations. The life and legacy of the company's founder, Alvin Ailey, is coming to the big screen in a new documentary titled Ailey. The film chronicles his rise to stardom and the challenges he faced as a creative force in the dance world from the 1960s to the early 1980s. I caught up with the film's director, Jamila Wignott, fresh from the film's Sundance premiere, where she talked about the project and more. The conversation was part of a talkback discussion presented in partnership with the Bronze Lens Film Festival and the Atlanta Film Society.
So this project actually is sort of a serendipitous one for me. I was approached by the executive producers at Insignia Productions who had been doing some research and noticed that there hadn't been a kind of full biographical portrait of Mr. Ailey. And we know each other from the public media PBS circles. So they approached me in 2017 and said, hey, do you want to make a film? Would you be interested in directing a film about Alvin Ailey? And I couldn't believe A, that one hadn't been done, and B, that the project had come my way, because I am a huge fan of Ailey, though I came to them, I think, pretty late. I was in college, and the Black student group on campus had tickets to a performance. And so it was actually the first introduction I ever had. And it just was this incredibly powerful experience of feeling this kind of raw truth and power. It's just very visceral, these bodies on stage, this incredible sense of storytelling, and really for me a sense of freedom. I just remember feeling like I was leaning in, seeing something I had never seen or experienced before, and in that kind of process of seeing, feeling seen. And so that evening really stayed with me, you know, just as a kind of super fan. And so it was just like extraordinary to be offered the opportunity. I actually didn't know much about Mr. Ailey's personal biography either. So that was the other really exceptional thing, to sort of know something of the company from the standpoint of just being an appreciative spectator, and then getting to spend time immersing myself in his life, in his story, his point of view. I'm really interested as a filmmaker in point of view and creating films that are immersive and sort of stay within the perspective and experience of the subject of the biography. And it felt with this film, you know, once we discovered these audio recordings that hadn't been made public before, that we really had an opportunity to kind of dive into the life experiences that informed the work of this artist. So, I mean, just really amazing and grateful.
I want to go back, Jamila. All of this footage, the audio, the pictures, even what I felt like were private conversations that Mr. Ailey was having about his young life as a boy growing up in Texas and venturing off to California, and even his first time going to New York City. How did you know what to use and what not to use?
Oh, man. Time. It took time. That's the thing. There was an overwhelming amount of material for this film, as you just mentioned, all those layers. And I think where we started was really with the audio interviews. So those are the interviews that you're talking about, where you hear him sort of talking about his early years in Texas, being lashed to his mother's hip, you know, looking for a place to be, going to California, discovering Catherine Dunham, which kind of unlocks all this possibility for him, and so on. So those audio recordings are actually interviews he conducted with A. Peter Bailey in the last year of his life. And so there is, I think, you know, Mr. Ailey is trying to set up the foundation for a biography. And there's a quality to the way he talked in those interviews that was different from the way that he conducted himself in the on-camera public interviews, the numerous ones he gave through his lifetime. So we started really listening to those. And there was a kind of poetry and like invocation and just real lyricism to those. And that really set the foundation for us. And we just sort of started to come up with some rules for ourselves. Like, we wouldn't introduce any of the on-camera interviews until it made sense for them to join Mr. Ailey on his journey. So you don't meet anybody until high school, where he encounters Carmen de Lavallade and Don Martin, both of whom were part of the company in its earliest days. And that, you know, and likewise, everybody sort of builds out from there. I think the biggest leap we made, and which was, you know, growth for me as an artist, was really leaning into Mr. Ailey's idea of blood memories. It was an aha moment for Rennie Harris, as he talks about in the film. And it was an aha moment for me because it meant that, you know, he really saw himself as a conduit for something much larger than himself. And he really was interested in thinking, I think, about legacy and rootedness and history. And so that meant that when we're talking about Texas, we don't have to just limit it to the actual either footage that's literally from the specific time period of his life, or, you know, a still photograph of him, that we could open it up to look at the experience. And we really, again, worked to put ourselves inside of his body as he moved through this world, because that's what those audio recordings felt like, that he wasn't just telling the facts of his life. He was in this process that was sort of transporting him back to those very days. And so he was back in Texas, you know, with his mother. He was back in LA, you know, discovering the world of dance. And that really opened up possibilities for us to be a little, you know, I think more experimental in our use of a kind of very expansive archival.
Catch the full conversation at WCLK.com, which also features commentary from dancer and filmmaker Jewel D. Lane and Omaleka Kumba from Giwaya Mata.
Jazz 91.9, Atlanta's jazz station, presents the 5th annual Song for My Sweetheart Valentine's Day Special. Show your love in the most memorable way with music and a dedication for Valentine's Day. Go to WCLK.com, click on the Song for My Sweetheart icon, and tell us what jazz song reminds you of that special someone and why. Then tune in on Friday, February 12th, for a special Jazz 91.9 WCLK Song for My Sweetheart Valentine's Day Serenade.
This is Omar Dorsey, a.k.a. Hollywood of Queen Sugar, and you're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
Do you feel like you have more to do?
Yes, that's why I'm still here. I mean, what my life became is not what I expected. I had no idea that I would touch anybody.
When the time comes, what do you want us to remember about you?
I've done my best. That's all.
You just heard the voice of Cicely Tyson talking to Gayle King about how she'd like to be remembered during a recent interview. The Oscar-winning actress of stage, screen, and film died last week at the age of 96. Here to remember her life and legacy are actresses Crystal Fox and Bresha Webb. The two of them starred in Tyler Perry's A Fall from Grace along with Miss Tyson and recall their fondest memories of being with her on set.
So the first time I worked with her was on Mama Flora's Family, and I felt like how Bresha's feeling now. I just felt like, I don't know, like the sky had opened up and God gave me an extra blessing to allow me to not just meet her, but be in something. And I had really small scenes with her, but they were very brief. But it literally was like, I couldn't breathe. I was like, I have to go over and just say, it's nice to meet you. And that I had two different types of experiences with Miss Tyson. And it was like, no one told me she didn't like to be called Miss Tyson. No one told me to call her by the character name. And so she was off at a distance. And I just wanted to come up and meet her, because the very first time we were going to work together was like the supposed to be the last scene of the movie where we're an established family. And I just wanted to go and pay my respects. And she was just not in the mood. And I got it after the fact. But even with that, I was still learning how, what various artists' styles of working are. But it was so frustrating for me because I wish someone had told me before so I wouldn't have disrupted her space. But even with that, I was just like, oh my gosh, she's working. You know, there she is. And it was just awe-inspiring. And I was like, okay, stay present, but do your job. But I wanted to, it's like watching her work, learning, and also making sure you say your lines.
Okay.
You know? Yeah. So by the time, I'm like, Risha, I didn't know till late that I didn't know Tyler was in Fall from Grace. And I didn't know Miss Tyson was in it. And when I learned she was in it, I was just like, oh, okay, another opportunity. But then it was extra special for me because Tyler had given, I was Grace. So I was like, oh, Miss Tyson is in a movie that I'm in. I thought we were going to have like the billboard was going to be all of us. And when it was just me, I was like, oh my God. Then it was like, oh my God, but Miss Tyson is in this. And one of the best things that I got from that experience was a compliment she gave to the whole thing. Tyler was saying she doesn't like to watch her films. And mm-hmm. she said repeatedly, she had watched this five times at least, five yes. times. And she said, I just can't stop watching it. I can't stop watching it.
And for you, Bree, go back if you can and just take us back to that moment of walking on set or her walking in and what that was like.
Well, it started for me. We celebrated her birthday. So yeah. When she came in, if you watch the video that Tyler posted, we celebrated her birthday and she hadn't been to the new studio. So she was taking a tour and we were waiting forever. It was like the most, you know, it was the most anticipated moment. She's about to turn the corner, be quiet, everybody. And then she finally gets there because she took her sweet time. Okay. She did not rush for anybody. Okay. And she loved her naps. Okay. So she took her time. We waited. And when she came around that corner, she knew it. She was so funny. She knew what we were doing, but she still wanted to turn it on. So I was like, she's got a sense of humor too. Oh my gosh. And so when she turned that corner and saw us, she gave me life. Like she was like, I love you. She was like, I just was weeping. I blacked out. Actually, I cried. I mean, just smiling and crying. And she gave us this wonderful story. She was a woman of anecdotes and just gave us this beautiful story. And she just talked about how much she loved birthdays and how she was so happy that she was turning 94 and she couldn't wait to turn 95. And she was like, I'm already celebrating my 95th birthday today. And so we were like, oh, praise God. Hallelujah. You know, she was like, I don't eat cake. I'm vegan. And I was like, yes, ma'am. She said, we have a vegan cake. She was like, get that out of my face. And she turned to me. She held my hand. Okay. She held my hand. And she said, are you my friend? You could have just buried me right then. She held my hand as I was crying. She said, why are you crying? She said, girl, you're my friend. You saved me, don't you? So she started the process then, you know, and, you know, Felicia came around. She said, Felicia, and you are the bad one. You're the bad one. So she was putting the story all together. And it was so funny. And like, I realized that she was a method. So, you know, she was a method actress. And so when I came on set, God bless Felicia Rashad, because she was the one that told me, now Miss Tyson is totally different at work. Okay. Don't call her Miss Tyson. And I'm so thankful after hearing your story, Crystal, because she told me, she said, now you see up in that window, she's preparing. She was already acting before anybody came to set. Okay. She was in the window. She was looking down out the window. Tyson said Tyler was like, she's already in it. She's already in it, guys. She's in hair and makeup. She's in it. So when you came to set, it was like you already just had to be in it. You know what I'm saying? And so when she came outside, it was raining that day and she had on the robe and she's disheveled and all that. And I just was like, okay, you know, let's go. Like there was no action. Everybody just get out the way and let her do her thing. And, you know, she stopped me mid-scene and she said, pull me. You can handle me. I'm strong. I said, okay, because I'm supposed to be pulling her back in the house. And I was like gentle with her because she's 94 years old at the time. And she was like, handle me. Pull me. I said, yes, ma'am. So I'm pulling her. We're doing things that aren't even in the script. I mean, we weren't acting. We were living, you know, and that's what that scene needed. And then when we got in the house, Tyler had told her to do this. It's in the basement. They're in the basement or they're going to eat you. He did some crazy line that stayed in the film, but she looked at me with them Jane Pittman eyes. And I hollered. I could not stop laughing. And she knew why. Like, she knew what she was doing. And I just was laughing. I said, Brisha, you about to mess up the scene. You are in the scene with Miss Tyson. And you are laughing at her. And she kept looking at me. And she was just like, it's funny, isn't it? And I was like, you are really hilarious. And so we finally got it. But, you know, she knew. And another thing was, she knew the coverage. She was like, you're going to need me from another angle. And he was like, okay, that's a wrap on Miss Tyson, and everybody's clapping. And she said, I'm not leaving because you need another angle. And so sure enough, the script came back and they were like, yeah, you need this angle here. She said, I'll wait. I'm ready. Are you ready? I'm ready.
Catch the full unedited conversation at WCLK.com. Well, that'll do it for this week's show. I'd like to thank all of my special guests, Nathan Hale Williams, Dylon Burnside, Jamila Wignott, Crystal Fox, and Brisha Webb. I'd also like to thank our engineer, Jami Wellman, and the voice of Entertainment Buzz, Reva Blue. Please join us next week for another exciting edition of Upfront Inside the Entertainment Industry.
If you like today's show, please hit us up at WCLK.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Upfront Inside the Entertainment Industry has been brought to you by Jazz 91.9 WCLK, Atlanta's jazz station, and is recorded from the campus of Clark Atlanta University.